What have you done that you think is most disappointing to God? That is not a pleasant question. And I doubt anyone here is anxious to shout out an answer. We all have sins of which we're ashamed. And the devil tries to capitalize on our awareness of such sins. He tries to convince us that they disqualify us from living the Christian life, so we might as well just go on sinning. The devil would like us to give up, so that while he did not keep us from coming to Christ, he might yet keep us from actively serving him. I think Peter would have understood the devil's strategy. How do you think he would have answered the question, "What have you done that is most disappointing to God?" I think he would have told about his activity on the night Jesus was betrayed. Early on that evening, Peter was his typical assertive self. Jesus had told his disciples that he was going away, and we read in John 13, 36 and 37, Simon Peter said to him, "Lord, where are you going?" Jesus answered him, "Where I am going, you cannot follow me now, but you shall follow me afterward." Peter said to him, "Lord, why can I not follow you now? I will lay down my life for your sake." Such a statement was, no doubt, rooted in Peter's love for Jesus, but also in his confidence in himself. And it was that self-confidence that Jesus challenged when he replied, "Will you lay down your life for my sake? Most assuredly, I say to you, the rooster shall not crow till you have denied me three times." That must have taken Peter aback. Perhaps he didn't want to believe it, just as he didn't want to believe what Jesus had said about his impending death on the cross. And yet, the sequel shows the truth of Jesus' words. All four Gospels record Peter's denial of Jesus later that night. John records how Peter, along with the beloved disciple, followed Jesus into the courtyard of the high priest, outside the place where Jesus was being interrogated. And warming himself at a charcoal fire with servants and officers, Peter was asked three times about his relationship with Jesus. And each time, he denied being his disciple. And immediately after the third denial, a rooster crowed, signaling to Peter that Jesus' prediction about him had come true. Matthew tells us Peter's response to this realization, "So he went out and wept bitterly." This was Peter's hour of shame. It was a shame that was likely on Peter's mind here at the seaside in John 21. The sight and smell of the charcoal fire on the beach would remind Peter of his denials of Jesus by another charcoal fire. Since then, Peter had been a witness of the empty tomb, and he had been with the other disciples when Jesus appeared to them. But there is no indication that Peter had had any private time with Jesus since Jesus rose from the grave. As far as John's narrative is concerned, the shame of Peter's denial still hangs over his head. And that is one reason I've suggested John doesn't conclude his gospel at the end of chapter 20, even though those verses sound so much like a conclusion. The last time we saw how Jesus met the disciples by the Sea of Galilee and gave them important principles in fulfilling their new creation commission. Today we will see Jesus confront Peter directly, personally, and with the goal of restoring him for his part in that coming apostolic work. This was essential for Peter. But this story teaches important truths that we all need to know, lest we be led astray by Satan's strategy to keep us burdened by the shame of sin so that we don't become spiritually fruitful in the service of Jesus. What Peter experienced is what we all need to experience from time to time in the struggle that is the Christian life. So let us give heed to this passage to learn about Jesus and Peter, but also about Jesus and ourselves. The passage breaks down into two sections, which will structure our message this morning. First of all, there are questions and answers in verses 15 through 17, and then there is prophecy of the future in verses 18 and 19. We begin with questions and answers at verse 15. So when they had eaten breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, "Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me more than these?" He said to him, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." He said to him, "Feed my lambs." He said to him again a second time, "Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me?" He said to him, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." He said to him, "Tend my sheep." He said to him the third time, "Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me?" Peter was grieved because he said to him the third time, "Do you love me?" And he said to him, "Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you." Jesus said to him, "Feed my sheep." Now let's first of all consider the setting. John gives a time indicator with the phrase, "when they had eaten breakfast." And you'll recall that seven disciples had been fishing on the lake and had caught nothing all night. And a man called to them from the shore asking them about their success. And when they reported their failure, he directed them to cast their net on the right side of the boat. And doing so, they caught so many fish they couldn't haul them all into the boat. And at that point, the beloved disciple said to Peter, "It is the Lord." And Peter jumped out of the boat and swam to shore to be with Jesus. And the others rowed to shore, hauling their fish behind the boat. And Jesus then directed them to bring some of their fish to add to the fish and bread he already had. And they joined him for breakfast around the charcoal fire. And now we are picking up the story after this meal. We get another clue about the setting when we glance ahead to verse 20. We read there, "Then Peter, turning around, saw the disciple whom Jesus loved following." And what this suggests is that after their breakfast together, Jesus and Peter got up and went for a walk together, perhaps along the shoreline. And this is the first one-on-one time they have had since Jesus' resurrection, and more significantly, since Peter's earlier denials of Jesus. The question and answer session during this walk has three components, and we will examine each in turn. We'll look first at Jesus' questions, secondly at Peter's responses, and thirdly at Jesus' commands. First, Jesus' questions, and we see it first in verse 15. Jesus said to Simon Peter, "Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me more than these?" We can note several things about this question. First of all, it is the way in which Jesus addresses Peter. Jesus begins, "Simon, son of Jonah," or some translations have "Simon, son of John." There's some variants in the manuscripts there. But he says, "Simon, son of Jonah." And this is an echo of the first encounter between these two men recorded back in chapter 1. We read in John 1, verses 41 through 43, "Andrew first found his own brother Simon and said to him, 'We have found the Messiah,'" which is translated the Christ. "And he brought him to Jesus. Now when Jesus looked at him, he said, 'You are Simon, son of Jonah. You shall be called Cephas,'" which is translated a stone, which is translated Peter. Now why would Jesus address Peter in this way, Simon, son of Jonah, here in chapter 21? It may create a sense of distance between the two as Jesus reverts to Peter's formal name rather than the familiar name that Jesus had given to him and that he had used throughout the gospel. This would establish some tension in the situation. Have Peter's denials taken him back to his life before he met Jesus? So there's a negative aspect when Jesus addresses Peter as Simon, son of Jonah. But we can also view it positively. As Jesus takes Peter back to the beginning, he is giving him a chance once more to choose to follow him. And both of these senses may be in play as Peter is being challenged to affirm rather than deny his relationship to Jesus. First question proper Jesus asks is, "Do you love me more than these?" And there's great debate about the referent of the word these. There's three possibilities. Jesus could be asking, do you love me more than these things? His boating, his fishing. That would mean, does your fishing expedition mean that you are reverting to your old way of life before you met me? Have you abandoned the new creation commission? Or, Jesus could be asking, do you love me more than you love these men? That is, the other disciples. And this will be a question of whether or not Peter will give primacy to his relationship to Jesus. Or thirdly, Jesus could be asking, do you love me more than these men love me? That is, do you really have the superior love for me that you have previously claimed? Now, each of these meanings is grammatically possible. Each has its advocates among the commentators. There's no great doctrine at stake here. But given the context of John's gospel, I think the third meaning is the most likely one. Peter had been so bold and self-confident, seemingly placing himself above the other disciples in his devotion to Jesus. Yet his denials have called that into question. And Jesus is humbling Peter when he asks, Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me more than these? The question is asked three times with some variation. Only the first time does Jesus bring up the matter of comparison to others. In verse 16, we read, he said again to him a second time, Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me? And in verse 17, we read, he said to him the third time, Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me? Now, you may have heard that Jesus uses one Greek word for love in the first two questions. It's the verbal form of phileo. It's the verb phileo. It's the form agape in the first two, and a form of philos in the third one. And some think there's great significance to this. I'm not so sure that that's the case. This is the kind of stylistic variation in vocabulary that we find frequently in John's gospel. And the fact is that both of these Greek words are used in John for the Father's love for the Son, for Jesus' love for human beings, and for human love for Jesus. So I think we go down the wrong road if we try to make too much of the variation of vocabulary in these verses. The key issue is that Jesus is asking Peter about Peter's love for him. And that was a legitimate question after Peter's activities the night of Jesus' arrest. He had denied Jesus three times, which was not exactly a sign of love and affection. And now Jesus is giving Peter an opportunity to answer to each of those denials, as it were, to undo each one with an affirmation of love. And while this may have been painful for Peter, as we will see, it was an act of loving restoration on the part of Jesus. Let's next look at Peter's responses. When Jesus first asked in verse 15, Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me more than these? Peter replies, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. And in verse 16, Peter's answer to the second question is the same. Yes, Lord, you know that I love you. It is in the response to the third question that we find a fuller response. Verse 17, Jesus said to him the third time, Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me? Peter was grieved because he had told him the third time, do you love me? And he said to him, Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you. Now, why Peter's grief at the third question? Well, there may be some frustration that Jesus' continuing questioning casts doubt on the reality of Peter's love. Why must he keep asking the same thing? But I think the key is that the third question is a stark reminder of the three questions that had led to Peter's three denials. And the third question is like the rooster crow that got Peter's attention. It casts his mind back to that dark and shameful night. And so he is grieved and he expands his answer, Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you. Note that Peter no longer makes boast in his own strength, his own confidence. He doesn't point to some good work on his part that demonstrates his love. He is humbled. In all three responses, he looks to the knowledge that Jesus has of his heart. And the third response includes an affirmation that Jesus has the divine attribute of omniscience. You know all things. This makes Peter's statement something of his version of Thomas's earlier declaration, "My Lord and my God." You see, here Peter is no longer relying on himself, but casting himself humbly upon his Lord, trusting that Jesus knows the true love Peter has for him in his heart. How encouraging this should be to all of us who are sinners. So often in our sinful actions, like Peter's denials, seem to send the message that we really don't love Jesus. After all, Jesus said, "If you love me, what? Keep my commandments." And the fact is that we don't always keep his commandments. But while we don't want ever to take our sin lightly, we can rest in the fact that Jesus knows our hearts. And he knows that despite our sin, we really do love him. Like Peter, we can grieve our failures and fight against sin, even as we maintain confidence that Jesus knows our love for him. And this confidence is only increased when we remember that our love for Jesus is a result of his prior love for us. Peter is not mistaken in his trust in Jesus, and this is shown in Jesus' commands. Three times, Jesus asks Peter if he loves him. Three times, Peter attests that he does. And three times, Jesus follows up with a command to Peter. Verse 15, "Feed my lambs." Verse 16, "Tend my sheep." Verse 17, "Feed my sheep." As with the references to love in this passage, there is variation in vocabulary in these commands, but that doesn't seem highly significant. All of them say basically the same thing. They are telling Peter that he is to carry out the new creation commission. Remember what Jesus had said to his disciples after he had risen from the dead and appeared to them behind locked doors. "As the Father has sent me, I also send you." And one aspect of the Father's sending of Jesus is that he sent Jesus to be the good shepherd of the sheep. This is a theme that is developed at length in John chapter 10. With each command that Jesus gives to Peter here in chapter 21, he affirms that the apostle is restored after his denials and that he is restored to active ministry. Specifically, he is restored to carry on Jesus' shepherding ministry after Jesus departs. As Jesus was sent to be a shepherd, so he sends Peter to be a shepherd. Now, there's a difference, of course. Peter is but an under-shepherd. Know what Jesus says: "Feed my lambs, tend my sheep, feed my sheep." The sheep belong to Jesus, having been given to him by his Father. Peter does not take over ownership of the sheep. They do not become Peter's sheep. But Peter is commanded to care for Jesus' sheep. And here we see the purpose of this restoration. It is not just that Peter needed emotional or psychological healing after denying Jesus, though that likely was the case. Jesus didn't restore Peter primarily so the apostle would feel good about himself. If anything, his humbling words might have worked in the opposite direction. Rather, Jesus restored Peter so that he could engage in ministry for Jesus. Peter's sin, as great as it was, did not disqualify him for the Christian life or for Christian service. Jesus met Peter at the point of his sin and gave him the opportunity to grieve over it. There's no suggestion here that Jesus took Peter's sin lightly. But the good news is that Peter's sin was not the final word. Jesus graciously restored Peter so that Peter could express his love for his Savior in obedient service. We should remember that when Jesus restores us to fellowship with him after we have sinned, he does so in order that we may faithfully serve him. Like Peter, we are restored for service. We are restored for ministry. And Jesus anticipates Peter faithfully serving him, as we see when we turn to consider, secondly, the prophecy of the future in verses 18 and 19. Jesus continues speaking to Peter. "Most assuredly, I say to you, when you were younger, you girded," that is, you dressed yourself, "and walked where you wished. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands, and another will gird you and carry you where you do not wish." This he spoke, signifying by what death he would glorify God. And when he had spoken this, he said to him, "Follow me." Now, as we've seen frequently in the Gospel of John, this phrase, "most assuredly," what is in some translations, "truly, truly," introduces a solemn pronouncement. It really gets our attention to focus, and this time it is about Peter's future. Jesus draws a contrast between Peter in youth and Peter in old age. And he's probably considering Peter in his youth at the moment when he's speaking to him. He says, "In youth you dressed yourself. In youth you walked wherever you wanted. But in old age you will stretch out your hands and another will dress you. In old age another will carry you where you do not want to go." Now that sounds a bit obscure. The main point of contrast seems to be doing what you want in youth versus being controlled by others in old age. Peter is heading toward a time when he will not be in control of his destiny. And Jesus tells us the import of this when he writes, John tells us the import of this when he writes, "This he spoke, signifying by what death he would glorify God." That Peter is going to be led where he doesn't want to go ultimately means that Peter will die the death of a martyr. Indeed, the language of stretching out one's hands was used in this day of crucifixion. Through such death, he will glorify God. Now that sounds negative, but think about what Jesus is prophesying to Peter. This one who had recently denied being his disciple was going to obey Jesus' command to feed and tend his sheep, and he was going to do so even to the point of dying in the service of his Lord. At one time, Peter was willing to deny Jesus to save his own life. Now he has been restored, and he will not deny Jesus, but will actually die himself as a martyr for the faith. You see, through the grace of Jesus, Peter has been transformed. Nothing will now keep him from fulfilling his kingdom calling. John writes, "And when he," Jesus, "had spoken this, he said to him, 'Follow me.'" And this call functions on several levels. We already pointed out that by addressing Jesus as Simon, son of Jonah, Jesus was taking him back to their very first encounter. And with this in mind, the command, "Follow me," is a call for Peter to reaffirm his role as a disciple of Jesus. "Follow me" was the first word Jesus gave to new disciples. And Peter is being offered an opportunity to get a new start as a disciple of Jesus. But more than that is in view here. Remember what Jesus said to Peter back in 13:36, "Where I am going, you cannot follow me now, but you shall follow me afterwards." Well, where was Jesus going at that time? He was not instantly going to heaven. He was going to his death. And though Peter couldn't follow Jesus immediately to the cross, he had been told that he would follow afterward. And it is this afterward that Jesus has in view here in chapter 21. Peter is going to have the opportunity to follow Jesus unto death. He will glorify God by dying as a martyr. And in this way, he will fulfill his role as a shepherd, like the good shepherd who gives his life for his sheep. And in this way, too, Peter will walk in the footsteps of Jesus. So do you get the big picture? Jesus restores Peter, but not so that he will feel good about himself, not so that he will have an easy life. This is not a health and wealth and prosperity gospel. Jesus restores Peter so that he will engage in ministry as a shepherd of the sheep. And for Peter, this will be ministry that includes suffering to the point of death. Now, that message may not sound very appealing to the average American in the 21st century, but the call to discipleship is ever the same. Jesus says, follow me. Jesus says, pick up your cross. Jesus says, come and die. Peter answered this call and embraced this vision. We see a reflection of this in his own writings. In 1 Peter 4, verses 16 to 19, Peter writes, if anyone suffers as a Christian, let him not be ashamed, but let him glorify God in this matter. Therefore, let those who suffer according to the will of God commit their souls to him in doing good as to a faithful Creator. Now, the Peter who penned those words was not the Peter who denied Jesus three times in the courtyard of the high priest. He was Peter who was transformed during a walk at the seaside with the risen Jesus. And by the end of that walk, Peter knew that he was forgiven by his Lord. He knew that he was called by Jesus again, that he was restored for ministry. And he was committed to faithfully following Jesus even unto death. Now, I began this sermon by posing a question. What have you done that is most disappointing to God? And that may have prompted you to some unpleasant thoughts. And they are thoughts Satan would like to use to convince you that you are disqualified for fruitful Christian living. But the story of Peter's restoration tells you a different story. Yes, grieve over your sin. But as you take it to Jesus in a spirit of repentance, know that he forgives you. And not only does he forgive you, he will restore you so that you can serve him. And here is an important principle for the Christian life. Past failure does not disqualify you from future fruitfulness. Past failure does not disqualify you from future fruitfulness. Like Peter, you can experience restoration and transformation through Jesus. In reflecting upon this passage and on Jesus' call for Peter to serve, James Montgomery Boyce asks an important question. What is the prerogative for such service? And he notes that the answer is neither moral perfection nor natural giftedness. Boyce writes, there is only one prerequisite for such service. It is love for Christ, issuing in a desire to serve him. If Jesus were to meet you today and take a walk, just the two of you, as he did with Peter, he might ask you, do you love me? What would your answer be? I can tell you that Satan will be whispering in your ear to answer no. He will tell you that you know that you don't really love Jesus and your sin proves it. But don't listen to that lie. If you trust Jesus because he died for your sins on the cross, then you can answer, even in the midst of all your struggle with sin, Lord, you know that I love you. And Jesus wouldn't try to convince you that you're wrong. He would say, as he said to Peter, follow me. Jesus is in the business of forgiveness. Jesus is in the business of restoration. Jesus is in the business of meeting you when you want to give up on yourself. And saying to you, don't give up on me. Jesus is in the business of giving fresh starts to failing disciples, transforming them into faithful servants, willing to serve him even unto death. Do you need a fresh start with Jesus today? What Jesus did for Peter, he can do for you. Believe it. Never forget it. And never let Satan convince you that you're beyond hope. For there is always hope in Jesus.